Okay. First of all, I'm going to start off with a whole series of apologies. Number one, to the speakers, I'm really sorry about the t-shirts. This is what you get when you work with a whole pile of 20-somethings who believe that everybody likes wearing slim, tight clothing. So if you get us your names and addresses, we will give you a proper fitting shirt and a bunch of other meaningless trinkets. Secondly, of course, with the timing, you're all going to suffer on the QEW. Third, I understand in the previous presentation there was some discussion about user interfaces and things. I'm sorry I missed it, but we actually had a photo shoot outside that I had to coordinate. So for the most part, my talk today isn't going to be a parade of product features or something you might expect from the marketing guy at a product company. I thought I would do that as a service to you more than anything else. But if you do have specific product questions, I'm obviously open for to answer them after the presentation. This is one of the toughest audiences for me, for the main reason that so many of you know what you're doing and know what this stuff is about. I have this common joke. My background is in engineering. My PhD is in mechanical engineering, master's and bachelor's are in systems design engineering. And whenever somebody's washing machine goes kaflooey, they come to me and say, well, you're an engineer. What's wrong with this? And I always tell them, look, I have engineering degrees. I'm not an engineer. And it's the same thing quite often with issues like computer algebra. Yes, I work for this great company, but I am neither a computer algebraist. I was at one point a user, but my technical colleagues at the company tell me that I wasn't really that typical and my opinions don't matter. Trying to, juggling all of that, and especially seeing a lot of the very interesting and great talks we've heard today, hopefully I have something to tell you that's of some value. My initial motivation was this, and this is a general question that this meeting is about. How does this kind of technology fit into the real, meaning industrial world? That's what the title is roughly. And I'm going to take my shot at that. There's a good news and bad news. Good news is I think a lot. There were some very consistent themes that were presented by the previous speakers, and they're very important themes. And in one sense, I'm going to reiterate them and possibly with a slight different spin to it. Bad news is you have to hear it all over again from me. Second motivation, assuming that maybe you don't want to hear a lot of the same stuff over and over again, I thought one thing I could offer you is some insight into what happens in the company, how we make certain decisions, what we think is important, that sort of thing. And then when you start asking the hard questions, I can say, look, man, that's the reality of business. That's what we do. But overall, I mean, it's a complex product. It's a complex industry that we're in, and I think every user deserves some perspective on what goes on inside. So this is the way I'm going to do it, some general concepts and history, some application stories, some insultingly trivial demonstrations of some things that I've done in the past, and some open discussion, hoping we have time. I'm also going to do you a favor. Anytime I come up to slides or information that is overtly marketing oriented, I will put up this sign. You can at that point either choose to ignore it or just listen to me do my thing. It's unavoidable. This is what I do at the company. Although I'm technical by background, for the most part, I help people create brochures and t-shirts. Also, the second warning, some of the material came from very maple-specific material, for obvious reasons. However, in an attempt to be semi-objective here, I've cleverly swapped out maple with CAS. So anytime I say CAS, a lot of times it's those comments are based on my fairly biased experience as a maple person. So, as this is sort of a mix of an academic and probably sort of a cream of the crop type audience from industry, I thought it might be good to start off with some quotes. I mean, I've seen lots of good speakers do that, so I I looked around last night for some motivational quotes, and actually I found this book. How many recognize this book? A couple of you. This is when I was doing my master's thesis and desperately looking for quotes to validate or make my thesis sound important, this was a godsend. This document, which was the sort of the proceedings of a meeting on where is computer algebra going, primarily in the 90s. This was produced in 1990. It actually had a very clear articulation of how this kind of technology fits into the real world. And in fact, I was surprised that, you know, 10 years after this was written, 12 years after, there's a lot of good stuff still that's relevant. And for anybody who is really interested in more general perspective, I'd recommend it. Unfortunately, I highly doubt you can find this anywhere these days. I could photocopy and put it on eBay for $400 if you want, but it is well worth reviewing if you can get a copy. First quote, purpose of computing is insight, not numbers. Probably 99% of the people in this room have seen this quote. Richard Hamming, I believe it was early 60s, and that's sort of putting computers in general into some perspective. The whole notion is it's not just blind number crunching, but you crunch those numbers for a reason, to get some insight into what you're studying. And for the computer algebra world, you can also interpret a second meaning because of the word numbers, and then you can sort of play around in your mind whether there's an alternate interpretation for the symbolic world. This is a good one. This is the nature of symbolic computation. It is a tool that increases scientific and engineering productivity. As a marketing guy, stuff like that really resonates, because when I stand in front of industrial customers especially, if I can't make that statement, they kick me out of the room because it's just a waste of time, as many people have attested to today. This is also another good one. Actually, this is probably the best one. These programs do in a few minutes virtually all mathematics that engineers and scientists know. You can take that one of two ways. Finally, the importance of this program cannot be overlooked or overestimated, because it so fundamentally alters the mechanics of mathematics. That was written in the Wall Street Journal in the early 90s, and at that time, I mean, it was a pretty exciting time for people in the Maple community and other computer algebra communities, as it was sort of the first time that something really mainstream like the Wall Street Journal picked up on it. That was the good news. The bad news was this was said about Mathematica. having said that, that was roughly 12 years ago. Today, both Wolfram Research and Waterloo Maple are very good, stable companies. We both produce pretty good products, although we tend to believe that we do a more sensible kind of science than our peers. Okay, I'm going to fly through this, because this one I'm sure most of you here know. For other audiences, I typically spend a bit more time, but History of CAS, Charles Babbage had this great idea. Ada Augustus, Countess of Lovelace, described it as an engine that can do a bunch of mathematics and possibly even do it symbolically. That was sort of the gist of it. In terms of the modern digital computer, near the end of the war or just after that, big, huge machines like ENIAC were invented. To do things like computing the trajectory of bombs, possibly some cryptography applications, things that are relatively close to the modern state of computer algebra aren't very recent things, as everybody knows. In fact, you know, even in the early 50s, this was a title of a couple of theses, I believe, at that time coming out of the U.S. Sort of important to our world is the whole Fortran-Lisp connection. Altran was a variation of Fortran. Of course, now we have the proper systems of reduce, maxima, scratchpad. Everybody knows about that. Coming out of the Fortran world, you also had the whole class of general programming languages like B, C, Pascal, Java, all of that. Application languages like Axel, CSMP, more engineering-ish programming languages. Also, in the math world, we can't forget about the numerical libraries like NAG and IMSL and all the famous packs of the world. And of course, they're sort of us in this category, descendant from the venerable systems like Reduce and Maxima. We have Maple Mathematica, which came from SMP, Axiom, which, as we found out today, is still used. However, of course, if you just take the landscape of today's computer algebra world, it's dominated by the top two. So why is this important? I usually put up this slide because of this. I really enjoy working in this industry because it's been my observation that the reason why digital computers exist today is to do mathematics. That was why Charles Babbage invented it. That was why the military people forced its development. That was why Fortran was created. Fortran is the formula translator. It was the first sort of generally accessible framework for entering A plus B instead of loading registers and moving wires and stuff like that. So I do believe that the world of mathematical computing is incredibly important to the general world of computing. Second, having said that, it's also very important to remember, and we try to remember that at the company, that we are also part of a special lineage within that world. In fact, it's sort of a weird situation where we're relatively or spiritually close to the mainstream scientific computing, engineering computing world where the CAD systems sit and the simulation systems sit. But we're also distinct enough off on the side. And hopefully, we're more of a cousin who has a future as opposed to like an Australopithecus or something like that who will eventually die off. But overall, there's a uniqueness about the way we approach mathematics that is absolutely distinct from other systems that may claim to do mathematics or does mathematics but in a fundamentally different way. So let's really talk about where some of these differences come from. And this is where sort of the reiteration of many of the talks today come in. First of all, the next set of figures is pretty much something that anybody either in engineering or in more of a practical science can draw. This is my version of it. In any challenge in engineering industry or certain types of practical sciences, you start off with some requirements. Sometimes it's very clean and well documented and well articulated. Sometimes it's as simple as your boss says, this thing crashed, it's your fault, fix it. And then somehow you have to decipher that and get some clarity from that. Then comes the notion of, okay, you have a general sense of where you're going, you have to come up with some ideas and concepts to eventually resolve your issues. In our context, the next step typically is something involving math and modeling in particular. With the exception of possibly one presentation today, pretty much all of the other presentations were about modeling of some sort, using mathematics to represent something that is real. Followed that, in this context, computer simulations or some computer-generated result is critical. In real life, there is no perfect solution. There are an infinite number of solutions, and you try your best to pick the best one. You rarely pick the first one, because the first one is generally, even if it is the right one, you don't know. And there's some process of identifying a better or best solution. And finally, some subsequent stage, whether it's manufacturing or physical prototyping or actual deployment, and deployment could mean you write a report or you do something with it to transfer your knowledge and results to some other process. And of course, in real life, everything is iterative and you never get it right the first time. So the real challenges then come in. Everything has been stated over and over again relates to either time or money or something very tangible like that. So goal number one could be reduce time in all stages. That results in faster time to market. It's amazing how much that phrase has come up today. So there must be something there. Better models, not so much to save time, but see if you can come out with a better result by spending a bit more time on your assumptions and the complexity of your models increase accuracy, which could sometimes increase quality. So not so much on the model side, but doing something during the solution phase that might improve one thing or another. So this is sort of the general context in engineering. Okay, so originally I had this thing up. This is what we as and it's not just us, it's also for our friends in other companies, this is what we sort of promised to the world, to identify and improve processes that still depend on human expertise. Again, originally I had that little figure on there until last night in this magic book. I found this quote. Numeric computation automates the last step of mathematical problem solving and has had substantial effect on the efficiency and modes of scientific and engineering inquiry. Symbolic computation aims at the automation of the steps of the mathematical problem solving that precede evaluating numerical models, and that to a large extent are still the domain of human problem solvers. So I felt a bit better. Yes, this is a real statement. There is a lot of stuff that people do today that they still do on pieces of paper on the back of a napkin or whatever, and possibly some of the biggest impact that we as a technology has had on the practical world is simply that we clean up some of that stuff. And many cases people ask us, well, you know, can your software design this 18 bar linkage with 2,000 degrees of freedom and this and this and this and this? Yeah, you can say yes theoretically, but really the answer should be there are lots of software that are specially tuned to doing that. However, what we do is we allow you to use that better by allowing you to think in creative ways before you hit that expensive workstation. So this is sort of from a high level what we could do. So again, I believe it was the last speaker who said the way his requirements rolled out was you have 2 months. Yes, so you have a fixed project time and possibly other types of fixed resources. Typically what happens in a project, you go through these phases, develop your computer simulation, and lo and behold, that's how much time you have to actually figure out something to report. This is where the concept of over-engineering came from, because there's never enough time to do the final stage, so everything has safety factors of 2 or 3 built into it, because that's just the basic reality. So if this is reality, then what CAS does is, at least it hopes to do this, in the basic human areas of ideas and concepts or the actual conceptual modeling process, really bring that stage into a more efficient mode. You can try out more simplified versions of what your final model might be. You can test a few ideas beforehand. In terms of actual development of the model, even if you're developing a sophisticated model, I think all of us have probably experienced the notion that if you use any of the major systems, it's probably the quickest way to concoct a reasonable program for some complicated mathematical process. If you were to try to do even some of the most straightforward things in that you can do in Maple, that may not even be symbolic. It may simply be a numerical computation of one thing or another. It's really nice to have an interpretive system that takes care of a whole pile of dirty work for you, and you basically type in one command as opposed to writing subroutines. And overall, in terms of the actual simulation of the solution side, you have choices in the computer algebra world, at least in the modern context, meaning in the last 5 years. You have symbolic options, you have numeric options, you have hybrid options that employ both, you have graphical, all sorts of other things. So, okay, this is sort of marketing-ish, but you know, if you somehow magically use this thing called computer algebra, you have more time for solution iteration, accuracy, or finished projects faster. And one of the things that is really good about this approach, I mean, aside from the fact that it theoretically helps you save time, computer algebra obviously preserves the meaning of the math, and this is referred to here and there. I actually like to use the term the gray box. And everybody knows what the black box concept is. In the world of scientific computing, you have algorithms to solve a problem or another. You feed in models and parameters, does something magical, and outcome, a table of numbers, table of floating point numbers. You have no idea what happens in the middle. More than likely, something was expanded out in the Taylor series. Things are manipulated here and there, but the original semantics just was not preserved. And so it's pretty much guesswork, and that's where the sort of the brute force iterative approaches in engineering, came from. The thing that when I was a user, realized there was some real value in holding on to the mathematical structures and being able to step back a couple of steps and then go forward again and move all over the place. You're really increasing the richness of the iterative process by doing that. The whole issue of parameter modification and management, In reality, that's what all of practical analysis is about, managing your parameters better. Whether you're a financial engineer or an electronics engineer, a mechanical engineer, or computer scientist, it's about your parameters. And anything that helps you manage your parameters better is a pretty good thing. So that's the CAS approach. This is one thing that a couple of people have mentioned, and it eerily remains at the heart of some of the most popular approaches to using computer algebra systems in many industries. And there is no particular champion industry. And that's the whole concept of using computer algebra as a preprocessor of some sort, or in the earlier stages of your design, as I've been mentioning. So in a formal sense, a couple of people have mentioned that they used Maple to generate differential equations, then they send it off somewhere to be solved because they're more specialized numerical algorithms. The whole example of non-dimensionalization is one where you do a lot of extra work right up front to simplify a problem so that you can then do whatever you want to do afterwards in a more efficient manner. That is a very important concept as it appears in industry. So they would use something like Maple or something equivalent in these early stages, as I've been mentioning. And rather than staying with the system, for whatever reason, they go somewhere else. The classic methods of doing that are things like the code generation that many of these systems can do. And I'm quite proud to say that Maple has a pretty damn good one. And it's going to get better very quickly. The dynamic link to MATLAB. We're the only commercial system where it's just built into the core system instead of forcing you to buy something else. We also have dynamic links to other things. All of those support this very important model of usage. There are purists who say that, well, wouldn't it be nice if it did everything? Well, that'd be great. But until such time, this still remains very important model, and we at the company try our best to support this in our product development.
What type of bundling do you do with MATLAB? Is it true that MATLAB always comes with a copy of Maple?
No, MATLAB has a product called the Symbolic Toolbox, which is an add-on to MATLAB that uses an older Maple kernel library. But the paradigm is the MATLAB paradigm, and occasionally if you want to do some symbolics, it goes out to this kernel. This concept generally applies to the natively symbolic systems and numeric post-processing. So within the Maple 8 world, this is just the feature mapping, and I'm not going to go into this in too much detail, but in addition to those features that help you go do that two-stage process, we also try our best to give you a fairly wide range of options for each of these stages. So in terms of model formulations, it's just the basic symbolics itself. It's sound, robust, it's been around for a long time, it ain't going anywhere. It's not going to disappear in the next year or anything like that. It's a very natural representation that maintains the unknowns, maintains the math structure and all of that. The library is pretty extensive these days, and it ranges well into the thousands. The language itself is highly flexible and very easy for certainly anybody older than 20. Yes, there are people who grew up with computers now and that have no concept of what a programming language is like. But anybody who's ever taken a programming course, at least into the 90s, should have absolutely no problem in using our language. In terms of solutions, we talked a bit about the solution options. The one thing that we're quite proud of is our relationship with NAG. NAG is well known for their vast library of numerical solvers, and we have a pretty good relationship with them where they offer us some of their technology. In terms of sort of the deployment side, we are getting better and better each day in terms of offering better user interfaces. And with the most recent release, we've added user interface customization through this thing that we call Maplets, which allows you to put a specialized user interface in front. So those are all of the great things that Maple 8 does. And I don't think I'm going to talk too much more about that. So let's move on to, I'm going to take a step back now, because now I'm going to go onto thin ice. I'm going to talk about my own experience as a user. I debated whether or not I was going to scan through our archives of application stories and things like that, or read through some journals and rip off somebody else's application. I thought, nah, I wouldn't mind for once talking about what I experienced when I was a user. So the timing of this is late 80s and early 90s. It started when I was, I believe, fourth year in Waterloo, and I just passed through a couple of courses in control systems, sort of classic control systems, and I remember after having passed through it that I had absolutely no idea what this stuff was about. But we all had to take it, and I had no idea what it was about. And it wasn't until I started, at that point, I don't know how it happened, but I was introduced to an earlier version of Maple, and at that time, I believe the Laplace transforms and the inverse Laplace transforms had just been put in, and they're nowhere near as good as they are now, but back then it was still reasonably decent. And at that time, we had a decent set of differential equation solvers, at least by the standards of the day, and so on and so forth. And this is one of the problem contexts that I first discovered the joys of computer algebra. This is actually the kind of problems we actually did in the course. In control systems, you draw these block diagrams, these graphs here, and there's all these signals flowing in and out of each other, and one of the design techniques or analysis techniques is if you're given something this complicated with this many components, there are ways that you can reduce everything down to a single block through some algebraic manipulation, and then you have one expression to deal with. To do something like this, even with the most trivial definitions of each of those blocks, for a typical undergrad, was pretty much impossible. I mean, this is obviously not the first two questions in an assignment set. This would be like the ninth or tenth question, but it was murder. In fact, if you try to go beyond the simple block simplification, meaning system reduction, to actually try to do something with it, if you have some history or background in what classic control systems does, you deal with these things called transfer functions that are functions of S, and then you do something called an inverse Laplace transform to get a time domain response, and then you're supposed to plot and do a bunch of stuff with it. Or you make a substitution with complex numbers, and you do frequency analysis and all of this kind of good stuff. And you also have to draw plots of something that contained five or six algebraic terms, and somehow you have to compute point by point and draw these things. Each question back then would take us a good half hour if we did it right the first time. So I'm going to show you the first of my insultingly trivial examples. That was just a message from Windows saying I shouldn't be launching applications from PowerPoint. I wonder why did they put that in then, put the feature in. Okay, so this is what Maple looks like today in case you haven't seen it. I decided to pre-enter all of these formulas in. And I warn you, this is trivial, and I hope I'm not offending people by such a trivial example. This is the restart command. This expression here is really the formula. It's called Mason's formula and it's the specific instance that matches that architecture that coordinates all of the individual block definitions into a single one. So let's just enter that. Okay, first thing, you can enter that. It doesn't barf at you because you didn't put a floating point number. That was magic to me when I was in fourth year. Then you put some things in. So you say one of the blocks is this rational, you have a bunch of others, some constant, some not, and you enter a bunch of things. So what's the result? Okay, well, that's not too exciting, just plop a bunch of stuff together. But the fact that it kept everything together, I thought was cool. Then I discovered the magic command, simplify. And look what it did. In the span of like a microsecond, it did something that most of my peers in my class could not do in half an hour. Of course that was magic. And then let's do some more magic. We now have a whole series of things called integral transforms, and we invoke the magic of the inverse Laplace transform. You get this thing. Actually, back then, it used to show this nice trigonometric expression, and sometime, I think, in the release 4 time frame, it turned into that. But as I'm told, this is actually quite a useful form. It basically suppresses certain types of computation until the point that you actually need it. But anyways, what this actually is the time domain response of that fairly complex system. So let's put in some actual parameters. What does it look like? Well, it still looks ugly, but let's plot it. So now you even have plotting. You can take something that is noticeably ugly and actually see what it does. Now, first bit of warning, this is nothing real. I just took a block diagram, put in some phony parameters, so this is not characteristic of anything real. But anyways, we can do something with it. Let's do something more ambitious. Let's turn one of the parameters that I had given numeric value back into symbolic parameter, like so. Look at it again, and now that ugly expression has t as well as k4 as independent variables. And of course, that means you can do a 3D plot. This is where I do a bit of song and dance, because as it turns out, this particular one takes a bit of time to compute. But in any case, that one issue of the 3D plot, that was something brand new that came out of the computer algebra world. Prior to then, nobody would even dream of doing a 3D plot for anything in engineering, because all of the material that we learned just assumed you couldn't do things like this, so they taught everything with respect to non-3D representations, or always make parametric assumptions so that you never have to do this. But now you have a convenient tool for this system. You might conclude that K4, which is theoretically some design parameter, has very little influence on the overall response in this particular domain of K4. And that actually, if you had a real-life example that was more meaningful, is insight that that may be of some value. If you want to try something slightly different in terms of analysis, I just made a substitution that S should be I times omega. Omega is a general frequency variable. And now we're entering something called Fourier analysis or frequency analysis. And what the kind of things you can do there, if that's the complex representation of your overall system transfer function, you take its denominator and just solve it for some roots. What I've done here is sort of related to things like root locus analysis, Nyquist analysis. It's what you do to attain some insight into either stability or amount of oscillation it has. And I remember, again, the first time I saw this, or I started playing around with Maple to do this kind of stuff, it was one of those weird eureka things where there's a nasty thing in engineering education where various different substrata of engineering try really hard to make their math look different from other people's math. And then a few very privileged people will sometimes be let in on the secret that it's all the same underneath. It's all second-order differential equations and, you know, whatever. All data is within 2 standard deviations of the mean. There's these really nice little tidbits of gems of information that they never tell you. And it wasn't until I actually started working with math the way you're supposed to, because I had a tool that I could do that with, that I was able to see the connections from previously disparate areas. So that was a very simple example. So some observations. Well, okay. If this was a more inexperienced audience, I would hear say, okay, well, it's command-oriented. I'm sorry, it's command-oriented. You don't have, yes, you have some options for button pushing and things like that, but if you want to really get value out of this system, you have to at some point get comfortable with the commands. Also, probably the more important observation is you have to be working in a state where you accept the notion that you're using math explicitly. If you're, as the technology stands today, if you go in hoping that it's just going to do all the math and not let you deal with any of it, you are going to suffer, and you're going to suffer big. You have to accept the notion that math is an important part of what you do, and so you have to go through that hurdle first. But once you do that, it actually has a lot of benefits that are real time-saving, real money-saving benefits. You also notice that even in that little example, there are a variety of useful functions for algebraic manipulation, transforms, special functions in the formal sense, plotting complex numbers, document environment, all of that. And again, I mentioned the quick reconciliation of disparate topic areas. This example, again, is trivial, but again, I stress the fact that if you had to ever do that by hand, that, and most people are doing that, it is not trivial. Also non-trivial is if you actually ever had to do that at that time for an industrial application, something that money depended on, it would have been virtually impossible to find specialized software for it. You could not have gone on the web and say, give me specialized software for doing inverse Laplace transforms or one thing or another. Just couldn't find it. If you wanted to program it by hand, using Fortran and BASIC to cover all of those areas, sub-areas of the mathematics involved in it, would also have been non-trivial. So some of you may recognize Fred. This is Fred Patterson, Vice President of Sales at Maple, pretending to be the ideal Maple user here. What are the qualities of the ideal Maple user? Okay, first of all, as I mentioned, there has to be some inclination or at least some acceptance of being explicit in mathematics. For the most part, it would be really nice if there was some modest level of experience with programming languages. You don't have to be an expert, but you have to be comfortable with the notion that there's structure, there's syntax, there is a certain way of doing things. And as we have seen today, by and large, the people that get absolutely the most out of these kinds of systems are people who are faced with unconventional modeling problems. Billions of dollars are spent literally on scientific and engineering software to do one thing or another. But all of those are based on the notion that the company is going to try its best to configure everything in a specialized way into this big honking box, and if you don't like the way it does one thing or another, tough. You have to wait for a new release to get a new algorithm to deal with a certain type of nonlinearity or a stochastic element or what have you. I mean, today you have things like mechatronics coming up. Mechatronics are systems that have components that are both electronic and mechanical interacting in the same space. There aren't a lot of software that handles that. However, one of the aspects in one of the previous presentations, the graph theory, graph theoretic method for mechanical modeling, is actually a general framework for hybrid modeling of different types of signals, because it works on mathematics, and mathematics is blind to where the signal is coming from. So all of these kinds of things, if you're immersed in that kind of a situation, it's a pretty useful environment to use. And finally, you can't actually afford some of the really specialized software. And that happens over and over again, because some of these software costs tens of thousands of dollars per seat, plus all the support that you need and the hardware that you need. So the benefits of explicit math, this shouldn't be new to anybody. Easy management of parameters, solution options, interdisciplinary analysis, implementation, research, great techniques. Modernization of classic techniques, and I'm going to go into that a bit. Richer modeling techniques with a modest personal investment. That's all good stuff. okay, here's a quote from a customer. It says how great we are and everything. And I don't know if anybody's ever experienced giving a testimonial to a vendor company, but basically you ask them, so, you know, why do you really like our product? And they give you something, and then you start asking them, oh, you mean to say this, and you send out this, which is a much richer form of what they say, and eventually they get tired of you, and they say yes, 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 and then you go to print. So Maple enables me to investigate that's more like a Socratic dialectic. Maple enables me to investigate the physics of most problems without resorting to brute force numerics. Maple enables me to identify, understand, and optimize the significant parameters of complicated equations. It's great. I'm actually going to skip over this stuff. And in fact, this is sort of a reiteration of one of the presentations and how effective computer algebra is in the one area of mechanical simulation. And in fact, Dynaflex is a system developed at the University of Waterloo by a prof in systems design engineering to do the graph theoretic formulation of mechanical and other types of models. You can actually access that freely through one of our websites if you're interested. And if you scan the world, there's all sorts of exciting applications from animated movies to Formula One to optics designs, chemical processes, financial, cryptography. Okay, this is customer comment number two. I do want to briefly talk about education. I dwelled on this in my previous example, but this is actually fairly important, and it has relevance in industry. This is the number one comment that we get from somebody who's never seen this kind of stuff. If only I had used this software in university. Why? This is an observation that I've had. First one is obvious. You get rid of a lot of the gross stuff. And as long as you don't totally neglect what you're doing so that you get screwed on your exam, it actually is a very nice thing to help you validate your assignment questions and all that sort of stuff. Iteration of problems. It's unheard of in standard undergraduate education that a student will willingly do a problem more than once if he managed to get to an answer of some sort. Unless somebody shows them that answer is wrong and they can give you the correct answer that you can copy. Having a tool like that actually has the effect of allowing a student to painlessly try something more than once, maybe under a slight adjustment or something like that. Enrichment exercises, that's obvious. Independent projects. Once you get into the more senior years of undergraduate education, you start getting projects and courses, and in fact, some of the best projects come out of students who have a good grasp of this technology, because they're able to take theoretical concepts using this technology that marries the theoretical and the practical. They're able to actually apply the theory in something semi-practical as an undergraduate. Again, things like that, insights and behavior like that is fairly rare in a lot of undergraduate circumstances. Final one was a great one for me. And this might be a debatable or a controversial point, but I'll be the first to admit that I didn't come in first in my class and in my undergraduate years. There are a lot of students who just did better at all the exams than I ever could dream of doing. By the time you hit third year, maybe I didn't learn this stuff well enough, or I just didn't write the exams well enough, but I was confused about a whole pile of things in mathematics. Then I started hitting these courses that depended on the use of mathematics, things like control systems, my specialization is more in control and mechanics, so a lot of the mechanics courses, they all assumed you knew how to do a bunch of things. I didn't, or I hadn't done it well enough that I could do it like the back of my hand. Systems like this were critical, and again, it's debatable whether it's good that a student all of a sudden go up to a state where they can do something that they didn't learn 2 years before, or if it's more preferable that, give them the tool. They're not going to learn to integrate this late in the game. Let something else do the integration so that they can at least concentrate on the more advanced concepts of that course. And for me, it was critical to finally get an appreciation of what control systems was about, what differential equations were about, what statistics were about. All of that started clicking in as I started actually working with the math as opposed to simply going through some mechanical procedure. And I think there are strong analogs in industry to this type of thing. And in fact, all of these benefits are ones hinted at by many of the speakers today. So what happens if you actually do use it at university? There's a bunch of people who never used it. What happens if you do? I was one of those people. They give you a PhD. Using a computer algebra system was actually fairly important in both my postgraduate degrees. For my PhD, the topic was something called surface modeling, and this was the context. And actually, this came out of a real company. At that time, the company called de Havilland Aircraft was, at that time, bought out by Boeing, and then they sold it to Bombardier, or Canadair. And but this is the Dash 8 aircraft, commuter aircraft. It's a real airplane. A lot of airlines use it. And there was this one problem area. For the most part, there was all sorts of software to help you design all sorts of most of the parts in terms of the geometry. But this part and this part were especially problematic. The kind of modeling that you needed to do, and this is just for the geometry, to actually represent the shape, required these parametric surfaces like spline surfaces or Bezier surfaces that had hundreds of control points to actually get the shape. And if you ever needed to change one part of it, just to maybe make it a bit sharper or a bit smoother, it would take them literally 2 months to make that change. And really, that was a major issue. So they contacted my group, my professor's group, and asked them, do they know a different way of doing things? And we sort of went and thought a bit creatively about it. And what we decided was a good approach was the modernization of a classic method using computer algebra systems. What does that mean? This is what it means. Conic lofting. This is where it all started. Lofting is what they used to do before computers to design hulls of ships and aircraft. The loft part refers to actual lofts in big barns where they would take life-size cross-sections of what they were building and actually then fit physical splines through the thing to actually create the shape. There was a gentleman named Liming, in the mid-century who thought, wouldn't it be great if you could actually just use mathematics and basic geometry to do this? And he came out with something that was actually called a method, called Liming's method, and this is it. And this is another one of the things that should seem trivial to everybody, but it's a very simple notion. If you have three straight lines intersecting in this manner, this red curve here through this expression will meet certain properties. Namely, it will intersect the intersections of these two lines, respective lines, and also it would have certain continuity characteristics at that point. How does this turn into an aircraft? Well, basically what they used to do is take four of these things so that you get some roundish rectangular thing, apply this thing, and then that gives you the mathematical definition. And that was actually quite a revolutionary notion, not so much because it did a better job of this, but it was the first time that for the aircraft industry, somebody had proposed a data structure for the geometry. That's what it was. It was a concise way of representing a fairly complicated shape. We just sort of took this idea and sort of went to town with it, and we left the simplicity of this method fairly quickly, and we actually went further with it. But for my problem, which is primarily the issue of the wing joining the fuselage, I had to generalize it from dealing with basic implicit curves and surfaces to parametric representations, because inevitably you will be using parametric surfaces in real design, or parametric representations of curves, generalize the surfaces, there are all sorts of related problems that you have to deal with: surface intersections, continuity, implicitization of parametric surfaces. And what we did was we decided to develop a proof of concept, or a prototype, if you will, using a computer algebra system, and also try to expand it to more of a general concept that people can use to do real work in the future. And considering that we actually had an industrial funding partner, we actually had to think about how does this actually fit into a real real design process. So we attempted all of that. This is what resulted. So these are images straight out of my my defense. I managed to dig it out of a
for those of you under the age of 25, this comes called 35 millimeter slide. You may not have seen one of those yet.
There was a time when people used to actually take pictures of screens rather than taking screenshots with a screen capture utility. Anyways, these are just examples. So using computer algebra, a bunch of manipulative techniques of sort of classic geometry as well as sort of newer computer-aided design type geometric concepts, we were able to do some stuff where we took two complex surfaces and we can very quickly develop a surface that joined the two in a particular way. The good thing was, unlike the prior methods or the conventional methods where you had 100 or 500 data points or control points or parameters, these are controlled by one or two. So assuming that you had enough expressive capability in the surface, you can make an adjustment on a couple of parameters, and then you get the whole space of solutions, potential solutions. And then you use some criteria to identify a good one or a bad one. So in the top, you can see that with the same mathematical formulation, you can very quickly go from a very a wide blend, if you will, to a very sharp blend. And this is something that looks closer to an airplane. For the most part, it was a theoretical exploration, although it had a definite end, industrial end. We discovered that for trying out a crazy idea, you could not beat a CAS approach. One of the nice things was, no systems like Maple or Mathematica do not have the best of any of the major areas that today it supports, with the exception of symbolics. None of them have the best numeric, none of them have the best graphic, none of them have the best programming language for everything, whatever. However, you put all those together, there was acceptable quality and depth in all of them, that everything became, if you have something that required everything, it was very fast. Parameter management, of course, I talked about data flexibility, the ability to just create data types whenever you wanted to, Maple tables, lists, sets, all that stuff. Project would have been impossible without a CAS, really. I mean, there was no way you could even imagine doing something like this without having a flexibility of a CAS platform. Some designs were actually implemented. Mine wasn't. I didn't get far enough into it, but there was actually a full-time research engineer hired who was working on more of the propeller housing stuff. That actually went the distance. So that's what happens when you actually try to get a degree versus trying to actually do the work. And in some sense, the computer algebra system removed a lot of the guesswork from the real design, meaning even if we just got the design closer so that if they had to revert back to the old way, they still saved time. Okay, so in 5 minutes, I have to talk about the future. I'm going to just skip over this. It's marketing stuff. All right, here's some cool stuff. If you look at some of the things driving the computer algebra industry today, there are sort of three dominant areas. And it's not just us, it's other companies. First, of course, the web. A lot of things are driven by the web. It's no longer just some thing that we used to experiment with. Yes, there was this volatile time when the dot-coms all came out with crazy ideas and collapsed, but for the most part, a lot of ideas have stabilized and they're now entrenched. And so ideas like server versions of CAS, math applets, or what we call maplets, math communications, that's something the Orca people know a lot about. basically connecting to different types of things. That's all very important. That drives a lot of the development in our community. Second, back in the early 90s, many of you know, there was a massive amount of funding going into the revitalization of calculus education in the universities, especially in North America, or at least the U.S. A lot of that money is gone now. The NSF has not funded those kinds of projects for a while. What is receiving the money today, and lots of it, is this stuff, lifelong learning, meaning no longer about just going to campus for 4 years and doing one thing or another and graduating with a degree, but somehow the education system has to be supportive of a wide variety of education models, from continuing education to distance education, something called asynchronous, meaning you don't actually have to be in the class, you can do it anytime you want. So things like basic access, something that helps you rapidly create masses of educational content. The buzz phrase for that these days is learning objects. Mathematical intelligence in a more educational sense. A lot of that is driving the CAS thinking these days. Something that you're likely going to be hearing more about, and this could simply be a pet project of Bill Gates, or it could be something that will stick, but new form factors in computing, and quite often driven by the mobile computing community. If you've seen, you will very soon see actual shipping prototypes of wonderful new laptops that convert from either a laptop or a tablet that have handwriting recognition and all that kind of stuff. A lot of that has been tried before, but the latest iteration is pretty darn good, and it may have a chance this time around to really stick. And any time new hardware platforms or new environments come around, any computing industry company has to take note. So, to conclude, I would simply like to leave you with the final marketing thing. Oh, sorry. This is just, actually, I have one more. This is a view of our current product space. MapleAid, Maple Application Center, which is a compilation of applications numbering in the thousands based on primarily MapleAid. We have a new product called MapleNet, which is our server-based version. TA is a new initiative that we're going into. It deals with the lifelong learning concept, but automatic grading and assessment of student performance in mathematics. There's a brief article in the newsletter that's available at the front covering that. So conclusions. Computer algebra has evolved differently than most technical software, and it's been influenced by many things, including a very dynamic and eccentric user community. I'm quite proud to say that we have this something that is so uniquely computing as far as the user community. They're loyal, they're boisterous, they're very critical often, but they love you at the same time. All of that happens in our world, and that has caused an evolution of our product in very different ways from something like a word processor. The benefits of computer algebra in the industry are real and far-reaching. Sometimes it's very difficult to see. I mean, in some of the presentations today, or even some of my stuff, if an average engineer looked at that stuff, they would turn around and run out the door. But if you give it a chance, the benefits are absolutely real, and they're real in the sense that it's a good tool for a whole pile of things you're probably doing today but taking too much time. Possibly more importantly, they're also a catalyst for you to enrich the way you work so that you can, in fact, do better, more creative, more sophisticated work in the future. So for more information, please go to this website. That's the best place to see how well at least Maple can be used, and other vendors have similar sites. Ours is accessible either through maplesoft.com or mapleapps.com. And finally, this is my final marketing stuff. There. Command the brilliance of 1,000 mathematicians. This is a theme that we've been pushing for the last couple of years. And it's more of a testament, not so much that we're brilliant at the company, but really the product or system, most good computer algebra systems are the product of the people who feed into it around the world. This is especially important for this meeting because the members of Orca are here, and we cannot deny the success of the company without acknowledging the Orca people, but also the inspiration that they've gotten from all these dead people sitting behind them. So that concludes my spiel, and I'd be happy to take questions.